So the heilige Geschbitze says, Va'elesh Shemois B'nei Israel. These are the names of the children of Israel who came down to Egypt. Yaakov with his household, they came. It mentions the names. Then it talks about how a new pharaoh, a new king arose in Egypt who didn't remember Yosef, and how he enslaved the Jewish people. And then he said, Hovon Ishak Maloi Pinirba, let's get clever to this nation in case they increase. And he called the Jewish midwives, and he said to them, when you're sitting there by the birthing stool and you see the baby's born, if it's a Jewish boy, kill it. If it's a Jewish girl, you can let it live. And it says, Vahiki Yaru Am Yaldois Salikim, and it was when the midwives feared God. And they didn't do like Pharaoh had said. Vayaslohem Botim, and he made them houses. God made them houses. So, the sages say, well, what are the houses? Houses, the kingly house, which came out of Miriam, because she was married to Kalev, and so the house of King David came out from her, and from Tzipporah, from Yocheved, came the house. She was the mother of Aaron, who was the Kahuna, the house of the Kohanic dynasty, and so on. The Ishbitzer says there's another meaning. It's a metaphor. Dehina yiras bos of Adam. See, if a person, if a person is afraid of another person, ein bo yishev hadas, you don't have serenity. You can't be at peace if you're in a fear. Ki yirahu hepach mizeh, because fear is the opposite of serenity. Ach yiras Hashem yisbaruch yesh beinach, but the exception to the rule is if it's a fear of God. Fear of God, trembling in the presence of the divine, is a source of serenity. And this is the hint. This is what the verse is teaching us when it says Vayaslohem Botim, that God made them houses. Kibayis Moir Al Yishev Hadas, because having a house, that is itself a metaphor for peace of mind and serenity and, you know, place to dwell and Memele Kasha Hoyelem Yishev Hadas. And when these women found that they had serenity and peace of mind, Machmasiris Likim, because of their fear of God. So they were without any kind of fear of Pharaoh. And this is the meaning of the phrase, and God made them houses. And this is also the meaning of the verse in the blessing that Jacob gave to his son Zvulun. He says, Zvulun dechoyf yamim, Zvulun will dwell by the seashore. Yishkoin, v'hu lechoyf onios, and it will be a haven for ships. So the Ishbitzer says, Yam, when you dwell in the sea, that's Moira Lira, that says that you're being tossed around. Right? Dwelling in the sea is a metaphor for not being serene. V'aniya, but the ship that Yaakov promises to Zvulun, that is a metaphor for Yishev Hadas. So God through Jacob is blessing Zvulun that even in his fear there will always be a certain peace of mind. In the Gemara they say that a ship, legally and technically, a ship is at rest. Even when it's moving and even when it's not anchored and tied to anything, it is its own little microcosm. It's its own world. And even if the sea is moving, the ship and all the things in it, relative to each other and themselves, certainly, that they are at rest. And so Yaakov says to Zvulun, you will dwell by the sea, but you will be a haven for ships. And that's the meaning of God made for Yocheved and Miriam, he made them houses, meaning that he gave them a place that they could feel centered and feel safe, and so that gave them the koyach, the strength to be able to face Pharaoh down and not be afraid of his threats. So then we know the story that Moshe was raised in the palace, and then he goes and he sees the trouble that the Jewish people are in, and he tries to defend one of the Hebrews by taking the life of one of his oppressors, one of the Egyptians, and then Pharaoh hears about it and they try to kill Moses, and Moses has to run away. Moses spends 40 years in Midian, where he marries Zipporah, and he has two children, and he's a shepherd. And one day, he's in the wilderness, and a sheep runs away, a lamb, and he chases it to find that he's standing in front of this burning bush, and the bush burns and is not consumed, and God speaks to him from the burning bush and tells him that he has this mission for him, and that he will go down to Egypt and tell the Jewish people the time has come for their delivery, and he'll tell Pharaoh and so on and so on. So Moshe answers, "Vayomer Moshe, mi anochi ki elech? Who am I that I'll go?" And the second question is, "Vichi oitzi? And can I really bring out the Jewish people?" So the Ishbitzer says, "Shehu Yeshoyah Shnei Devorim." First he asks, "Mi anochi heino shoyim avakish ma'ashem izbarach?" The question of "Who am I?" is a question of God. Can you tell me, please, why have I been chosen for this particular mission, to redeem the Jewish people, more than anybody else? What is it about me that has, you know, singled me out? And will I bring out the Jewish people? That is, the question has to be rephrased. The Ishbitzer says the word v'chi here doesn't mean and will it happen, but rather and when it happens. V'chi oitzi, and when I bring out the Jewish people. Hainu. The question is, emes ki yavdo yisim beforach. It's true, Moshe says, that they are being enslaved and unfairly treated. V'haroi shiigalo, and it's right, it's only right that the Jewish people be redeemed. Rakafapi came, but still, Mayu kishi oitziem. What's going to happen when I do bring them out of Egypt? Halozeis betach en kavonas Hashem izbarach shiutav lem rak boilem azeh. That's, surely, it can't just stop there. I mean, I'm going to bring, so the v'chi oitzi as b'nei Yisrael really translates as, and so nu, when I bring out the Jewish people, so nu, so then what? Can't believe that you just, that this is like, this is what it's all about, that you're just going to bring the Jewish people out of Egypt and say, you know, that's it, you're on your own. So this, on these two questions, God answered him. On the question that Moshe asks, who am I that I've been specialed out? God says, I will be with you. Heinu machmas shiyudaticho, because I know you. Ki eincha noite l'shum dvar mitzidcho. Because I know you, God says to Moshe, that I am with you, and you're not really interested in anything or anybody else. Rak l'mash ani shaleach l'cho, you are a perfect shaleach. You are a perfect messenger. Ki shem Moshe, because the name Moshe, what does it mean? Minamayim shisihu, she called him Moshe because she drew him. The word Moshe means to draw from the water. Ki minamayim shisihu, she drew him out of the water. Hainu, shenifshet mikol chemde v'hanos atzmi. You know, in Ishbitz, the water is always a metaphor for desire. So, the daughter of Pharaoh names him Moshe because he is drawn from the water. And this is a prophetic insight into the personality and character of Moshe, that he is completely stripped and divested of desires for himself. And he doesn't have any pride, and he doesn't take any, you know, the fact that God speaks to him face to face, mouth to mouth, is not at all a source of vanity to Moshe, because Moshe doesn't think of himself. He is not self-centered. So God says to him, that's why you are chosen, because I know I am always going to be with you. And the second, concerning the second question that you ask, so what? What's going to happen when I bring the Jewish people out of Egypt? It's not just, you know, you're quite right, Moshe. My intention isn't simply to say, okay, let's destroy the Egyptians and you can take over their land and enjoy all their stuff. Heshivoi, about that God says to him, Behitziacho, so when you bring the people out of Egypt, Tavdun Esalikim Barazeh, you are going to worship God on this mountain where we are right now. Hainu She'achnis Eschem Tachas Oili Oil Torah, God says to Moshe, the purpose of my bringing the Jewish people out of Egypt is in fact not simply to give them freedom from the slavery that they are suffering now, but rather to bring them here to this mountain where they will be worshipping me. And I will enter them into the beneath the yoke of my yoke, the yoke of the Torah. God says, I am going to have business dealings with you with things that live and last forever and ever and ever. And that's what God meant when he sent to him, and this is the sign that I sent you. And God didn't use the word ani, but rather the longer word anoichi. And one of the things that the Ishbita does is he notices in the Torah where God chooses the word anoichi rather than ani, ki ois chof, because the letter chof, the Hebrew letter chaf in the word, you could say ani, but the word chaf, the letter chaf in there makes it anochi, moira al dova hakaim lo me'ad. That suggests something that lasts forever and ever. According to the Ishbitzer, according to the Ari, the letter chaf is associated with the life source. And so when God says to Moshe, because I sent you, and the I contains that chaf, right? Then it's saying that the business dealings that you're going to be carrying out on my behalf in this endeavor that I'm sending is going to be something that lasts forever and ever. So God says to Moshe, Lechvos, I have to go gather all the Jewish people, the elders, and tell them, God has spoken to me and he said, Pokoit Pokadati, I've remembered my promise that I made to your ancestors and I've come to redeem you. So Moshe says, Vayan Moshe Vayoyme, Moshe says, Vehen lo yaminu li, they won't believe me. So the Ishbita says, what do you mean? Why would Moshe cast some kind of aspersions on the Jewish people to say that they won't believe him, that they have no emuna, that they won't have faith? Why? What's in it for Moshe to make such a suggestion? You know, and even if it were true, like why do you have to sort of go to that worst case scenario? And if God has said to him, this is the mission that I have for you, why doesn't he just say, all right, and then go on and do it? Like why this argument? So the Ishbita says, Afshe Botach Moshe, Moshe knew, Moshe was quite sure, Ki Aminu, that the Jewish people are going to believe in God, Me'achash Hashem Yisbaruch Hasholcho, since God is sending him on this mission, obviously it's going to succeed. U'bavada Yetzliach, there's no question that he's going to be Matzliach. So then, what's Moshe's Kavanah, what's his intention when he says they're not going to believe? He says, God, when you send a messenger, don't make it that the messenger has to come v'bakosha, you know, and plead with them. Please believe me that God is going to read him. What kind of usfarapunim, you know, what kind of a face is this? You know, what impression does that make that the Savior, Mashiach, comes and he has to plead with us? Please believe me, I've come to redeem you. Like, why, God, can't you give me something, a tool, or some medium that I could use to make them believe, force them to believe, some magic or something powerful that when I say to them, God has remembered you, they'd all say, yeah, right, you know, instead of really, yeah. So the Ishbitza, in his true Ishbitza way, says everything is from heaven. Vayomer, God says to Moshe, Maze beyodach, what is this in your hand? Vayomer, Moshe says, matter, it's a staff. Vayomer, and God says, Hashlichehu atz, throw the staff to the ground. Vayhi lenochosh, and Moshe threw it to the ground, and it became a serpent, a snake. How is that a response? So, the Ishbitza says, Kimata roimez al shorish achaim, the staff, you know, we talk about the staff being the staff of life, right? The staff is a symbol of life. We learn in the Gemara in Psochim, Asidim tzadikim shiyichyu mesim, in the future, the righteous are going to resurrect the dead. As it is written in Zechariah v'ishmish antoi b'yodoi, and everybody, each will have his staff in his hand. So there's something about the staff that they will touch the dead and the dead will come back to life. So God says to Moshe, take this staff which is a symbol of life, Ashtichehu arts v'ira noch, and throw it to the ground and it will become a serpent. Hainu sheheraloi, God shows to Moshe, this question that you asked did not come from this Shoyresh Hachayim, from the source of life. In other words, Moshe, that question was not a divine, that didn't come from the divine Moshe. That came from the earth Moshe. That came from, where did that question come from? It came from the serpent. That question didn't come from life. You think it feels like it's alive, but it's not. The question that you're asking, it doesn't really have any truth to it. Because that's the symbol of the nochash, the serpent, you know, it's an illusion. You should have understood. I'm God, right? In my hand, libois pnei odam, are the hearts of all people. I can bend their hearts. I can open their hearts. And, you know, God says to Moshe, I'm in charge, right? Im shelachti oischo, if I'm sending you, then you should have had emunah, faith, belief. Ki eshlach belibam, that I'm, as you approach, I am going to send into their hearts. Sheyuchruchu lishmaylach, that they'll be forced to listen to you. In other words, if I'm sending you, why didn't you believe automatically that I'm also going to be sending something into them that's going to make them receptive to you? Where did this questioning come from? This doubting, this cynicism? It's like a little streak of cynicism. And so the Torah tells us, "Vayonos Moshe miponav," when Moshe saw the snake, he jumped back and he was alarmed, right? He ran away from it, shana shehevin tus, because he understood that his mistake was a really profound error of judgment, you know, to say to God, you know, instead of saying, ah, so it means you're already putting into their hearts the belief that they are going to be saved. So then God says to him, Shlach yotcho v'achoyz biznovay. So now, okay, Moshe, grab hold of the snake, the serpent, by its tail. He does, and his staff turns back into a staff. God says to Moshe, all right, so now we've had our little drama, and you're thinking to yourself, hi, Moshe, how could I have made such a mistake to question God? I mean, obviously, if God is sending me, he's going to be sending into their hearts to listen to me. So God says to Moshe, okay, so now look again at this thought that you're having. Because the same question that you could be asking about them, you could be asking about you. How come I didn't put into your heart to believe me that I would put into their heart, right? So like, if I'm in charge, so if you have a doubt, and I'm saying to you, how could you have a doubt? Well, you have a doubt because I gave you the doubt. Because I put into your heart that little doubt, are they going to listen to me? Because that also is the will of God. And in this little denouement of the drama, God is saying to Moshe, so you know what? There is going to be some doubt. That doubt, that residue of cynicism that can really, you know, it can, in some ways it can really destroy everything. You know, it's like, is it really? That I'm putting that as a little tincture into the mix as well. And God says to him, you know, there's going to be a place where that happens. Because that is also part of God's inscrutable plan. That from time to time the Jewish people do stumble. They don't believe. One of the examples is b'machlokes Korach, right? In the rebellion, when Korach rebels against Moshe, and most of the Jewish people are silently, at best, on Korach's side, because they feel that somehow Moshe is arrogant, or you know, they accuse him of nepotism and stuff. So, how did it come about that they lost their faith in Moshe? And in doing so, you know, you can't really get away from the fact that they must a little bit have lost their faith in God, right? So how does that come about? So God says to Moshe, you're right. There will come a time when they won't believe. So then the Ishbitzer interprets the following story, that the three miracles that God shows Moshe, three times the Jewish people stumbled in their faith. Moifes HaMata, then the first sign, the one with the stick, the staff, that turns, because God says to Moshe, when you stand in front of Pharaoh, throw your staff to the ground. That corresponds to the rebellion that happened at the time of Korach, Moshe's cousin. It says, and the people spoke about God and about Moshe. And they said, V'nafshenu kotzo, our soul is fed up with this bread, this terrible food that we eat, and they complained about the man. And it says, and God sent the snakes among the people. So this little drama with the staff and the snake becoming a snake, that is a hint at that particular thing. But that got fixed. Because the Torah tells us that Moshe made a serpent of bronze and put it on a stick, and then everybody who looked at it, because it was a metaphor. And so when people realized how they were playing out this little drama, then that was the fixing of that. And so therefore, in this story here in the desert where God is talking to Moshe, also the snake turns back to a staff, because he's hinting to him that in the future, when you and the Jewish people are fighting about belief and cynicism and stuff, you'll see that it will be worked out, it will be fixed. And then the second miracle that God wants is Moshe puts his hand into his bosom and he pulls it out and it's all white and has turned leprous. And then he puts his hand back into his bosom and he pulls out, it's healed, right? So what was this a metaphor? Neged shedibru Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe. You know, in the story in Ba'alei Tzchor, we have the story that Miriam speaks Lashon Hara, and Aaron listens to the Lashon Hara about Moshe, and Miriam is stricken with leprosy. So this is another example of the emunah, the faith, and a little bit of cynicism that has crept in. And that's the second story. V'gam al zeho yetikin. And this was also fixed. Lefikach gam zechozen. So Moshe is healed. V'hamoifes hashlishi. What is the third sign? God says to Moshe, and if they don't listen to the first two signs, then take from the waters of the river and it will turn to blood. This is the final lack of emuna. Which is the final story of lack of emuna? That's Moshe himself, where Moshe, instead of speaking to the rock, he smites the rock, he strikes the rock to bring out water. Shenera la'ein ki lo niskan, because if you look at this story, there doesn't seem to be a fixing. And so here we also don't find that the blood turned back to water. So there are three levels of lack of faith. There's the first, that the Jewish people display a lack of faith, and then the leaders of the Jewish people display a lack of faith, and then Moshe himself displays a lack of faith, and they're all hinted at here, and it's there in the very first question that Moshe is asking God, "V'hem lo yaminu li," and they won't believe me. Moshe is already hinting that he senses that there's going to be a lack of faith, and God says to Moshe, "Aren't I the one who puts faith into people's mind?" And Moshe says, "Yeah, you are." So then God says, "So how come that you also?" That, you know, your mind is also being led, right? So again, this is like the Ishbitzer Torah taken to the nth degree, right? Because the Ishbitzer is saying that even our doubts in God are also part of the divine plan, right? And God can just as easily fill us full of faith. And I guess the message there is also, if somebody has faith, they shouldn't just automatically assume that they have worked hard for their faith. You know, we also have to accept that faith in God is also a gift from God, and not to be so proud, you know, and not to be so arrogant. Oh, I'm a believer, you know. It's like, you know why you're a believer? Maybe you're a believer because God has graced you with belief, you know, and maybe you shouldn't, be so... look down on people who don't have faith. Maybe there's, maybe God has taken away their faith, or, you know, maybe have a little bit of humility and also thankfulness, you know, also thankfulness. You know, very often when it comes to Shabbos, you know, and I hear people who keep Shabbos, you know, talk about people who don't keep Shabbos, right? And I think to myself, but you know something? Maybe the person who didn't keep Shabbos has never tasted Shabbos, you know? I mean, you have to be given, somebody has to give you a gift of Shabbos for you to appreciate what Shabbos is, for you to even want to then come and keep Shabbos. Not such a simple thing, right? To condemn somebody for not keeping Shabbos, you know, when you're a Shabbos observant person, how about having a little humility and gratitude and saying, Baruch Hashem, you know, I know how to enjoy Shabbos. I have the gift of Shabbos every week, you know, and thank God that I do, you know. Thank God that I do, because had I been left to my own devices, I probably wouldn't, you know. And in a sense, you know, I've been working for the last 20 years or so, the 12-step program, you know, and I have, one day at a time, I have sobriety, right? But I never think to myself, oh, I earned it, this is mine, you know, this is, look, see, I'm great, and, you know, why doesn't such and such a person, why can't they get sober? You know, this, I learned this Ishbitzer Torah right at the beginning of my sobriety in 1986, and I remember thinking to myself, oh, so even your thoughts can be gifts, even your faith can be a gift, you know, so be grateful for... You know, don't take credit for everything, every virtue that you have. Maybe you've been chosen by God to have the great gift of sobriety so that other people can see how powerful God is rather than how powerful Hershey is, right? And the same thing is with faith. You know, if you have faith, then don't take so much credit for it, but give God the credit for it and say, wow, you know, thank you, God, for giving me faith in you. Because look how many people there are in the world who are so destitute of faith. Right? And here comes the Ishbitzer Torah that I think of probably once a day. It's just so basic. God says to Moshe, all right, so start walking to Egypt, and on the way your brother Aaron, he's left Egypt, he's a prophet, you know, I told him to come and meet you. And they meet at Mount Horeb, and Aaron says to Moshe, what are you doing? You're bringing your wife? You're bringing your children to Egypt? Well, we don't have enough Jews enslaved in Egypt. You have to bring another couple? Like, what's going on? He sends them back to Jethro, his father-in-law, and he and Aaron, they travel down to Egypt, and, you know, the big 10 plagues and the Exodus unfolds. So the Torah tells us, Vayelech, that Moshe went, Vayifkeshehu, and he encounters Aaron, Behar Elikim, at the mountain of God. Vayishakloi, and he kissed him. So, these two words, Vayifkeshehu, he encountered him, that they had a pegisha, a meeting, and Vayishakloi, and he kissed him, this mirrors a verse in Psalm 85. So the Medrash makes the connection and he says like this, Omer Reb Simon. Reb Simon said, B'shor Shubwa Kodesh Baruch Hu Livroi says Adam Arishon, when God came to create Adam, Na'al Sumalachi Ashores Kitim Kitim, so the angels, they divided themselves into various opposing camps and groups, cliques, parties, V'chaburois Chaburois. Mehem Oimrim Al Yivro. There were groups who said, no, no, God, don't create man. Umehem Omrim, and there were groups who said, yeah, yeah, Yivro, create man. Hainu hu dahoma. This is what it means in Psalm 85. Chesed ve'emes nefkishu. Chesed is loving kindness, and emes is the truth. So chesed ve'emes nefkishu. Chesed and emes had a pigisha, they had a meeting. Tzedek v'sholoim noshoku, and tzedek is righteousness, justice. V'sholoim is peace. And justice and peace, noshoku, they kissed. So what does it mean that chesed and emes, that kindness, love and truth had an encounter, and justice and peace kissed? What does it mean? So the Medrash says, this is Reb Simon, chesed, kindness, love, said Yivro. He said, God, of course you should create man. Shugoy mechasonim, man has got so much love to give. He does so much kindness. And yeah, definitely create man. Emes, so then the truth steps in and says, no. Al Yivro, don't create man. Shekulo shkorim, he's just lies. There's no such thing as an honest person in this world. God, what are you doing? You're going to create this creature that from the moment it becomes self-aware, it just becomes more and more full of guile and lies and cheating and untruth and... don't do it. Tzedek, so justice comes. Oimer Yivro says, God, please create the world. Shu'ois tzedokah is because man is going to do charity and justice and... yeah, definitely. Sholem Oimer, so then peace comes and says, God, please don't create the world. Dekule ketote, it's just going to be full of fighting from beginning to end. There's going to be no peace. Ma osa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Reb Simon says, what did God do? Notal emes, he took the truth, v'hishlichoi la'oretz, and he threw it to the ground. Hainu hu dahoma, this is the meaning of the verse in Daniel, v'tishlach emes arzo, you threw truth to the ground. Omru Malachi Ashores, to the angels, the ministering angels, said, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before God, Riboyin Olam, Master of the World, Ma atu mevaze tachsis al tichsayu shelach. How can you just abuse the royal seal? Because we have this tradition that the seal of God is emes. How can you just throw it to the ground? Tala emes min ha'oretz, so God said, let truth grow out of the ground. Hodu d'chsiv emes moretz titzmach, and that's what the next verse in Psalm 85 says, and the truth has to grow from the ground. So, the Ishbitzer says, there's a famous question, akushim afur semes, ma oso im sholem, how come God didn't throw the truth to didn't throw peace to the ground. It says he threw truth to the ground, right? Why didn't he? Because truth was objecting to the creation, the world. So God says, "You got to go." How come he didn't throw shalom to the ground? So it's interesting that there are many answers to this, and the most obvious answer is that if you're not really interested in the truth, then it's not so hard to make peace, right? When you go to court, if the judge should refuse to pass a sentence until he feels that they got it, the truth, nobody would ever have justice, right? It would die on the vine, right? So instead of looking for the truth, we say, regardless of what the exact details were, let's see if we can administer justice here, because really, that's why the people have come to court, right? We don't have enough lifetimes to sort out exactly what the truth is, right? Because if he's going to insist on the finding out the truth, you're never going to get there, right? So, and that's the way the world is. If I keep on trying to rehash the argument, you said this, no I didn't, and you did this, no I... We're never going to make peace if we're going to insist on the truth. Right? If we're ready to settle for justice, then we could make peace, right? The Ishbitzer has another reading. He says like this, Moshe hoyo emes v'tzedek. Moshe represents two of these four aspects of God, the truth and justice. Ech mitzad echad oimi yivro. So how could it be that Moshe, on the one hand, he says, as in my incarnation as the truth, please God, don't create the world. But on the other hand, Moshe, in his incarnation as justice, as tzedek, he's quite happy to have the world created. And then on the other hand, you've got his brother Aaron. His brother Aaron is peace. As peace, he says, please God, don't create the world. But as his incarnation, as chesed, as love, he says, yeah, create the world. V'ha'inim b'zeh emes oime al yivro. Emes says, please God, don't create the world. V'gam Moshe shoyim idose emes. And Moshe, who his character, he couldn't stand a lie. Mo'id hirim b'nafshoy. Moshe is like in great pain in his soul. Madua derech rishoyim tzolocha. Why is it that the wicked have success? If your soul is connected to the truth, then the world isn't run right, right? In a world that was run properly, wickedness would always be punished or paid back in kind, and virtue would always be paid in kind. The fact that a wicked person can do something and not be struck down by a meteorite coming from outer space, that itself, it just seems not emes. The fact that Pharaoh can, Pharaoh was the lowest low life. Pharaoh is, he's the Saddam Hussein, right, of his generation, right? And he's taking this noble Kinderlach, right, the Eniklach, the grandchildren of Avram Yitzchak Yankov, and he says to them, you are slaves. You are Untermensch, right? You are the lowest of the low. I am noble, right? I am so noble. I am so noble that I can only have children with my own sister, because I can't, my blood is so blue, I can't even dilute it by having children with a commoner, I have to have children by somebody who is my equal, so Pharaoh marries his sister, right? And this untermensch, this lowlife, he's treating the Jewish people, the Hebrews, he's treating them as slaves. And Moshe, to Moshe, there couldn't be a bigger lie. That is like, if you want one little microcosmic lie that sort of says it all, it is that Pharaoh sits on a golden throne, eating, grapes that have been peeled by his handmaidens. And out there, the Jews are, you know, trampling straw with thorns in it and making bricks, and the bricks are full of blood, right? From the thorns that have gone into the soles of the feet of the Nebuch of the Eden, who have to trample this straw and clay to make it into bricks, right? It's a lie. I mean, it's just not. There's, yeah. Where's the truth? Moshe can't deal with it. Moshe is like, he's got this thunderstorm going off in his head all the time. The Aaron Ochiv, Aaron on the other hand, hoye midosay midos chesed. Aaron, first of all, he's not into big philosophical questions the way Moshe is. He's like, yeah, he sees somebody who needs something. He goes and takes care of it. You know, not that Moshe didn't care. I mean, Moshe, we know that Moshe was chosen because he went looking for 3 days for this lamb, this one lamb that was missing from his flock, right? I mean, 3 days he looked for it among the rocks. So it's not that Moshe didn't have compassion, but Moshe was thinking about the big picture. Aaron says, I don't have energy to think about the big picture. There are chesed's that need, there's loving kindness that needs to be done now. V'lomed tomid das lisboil hakol. So Aaron, he had taught himself forbearance, you know, patience. V'lekabel b'ahava, to take, to accept with love everything that's happening. B'lishum tana, without any kind of complaint neged Hashem Yisbarach, against God. And this is the meaning of the Medrash. The Medrash says, when Moshe was arguing, Moshe argues for 3 days with God about being sent to Egypt, and he says, you know, I'm hard of speech. You know, I have this speech impediment. And God says to him, Mi sam pe l'odam, who gave man a mouth? Right? And the Medrash says that what God meant was, who told you to run away from Pharaoh? Interesting that the metaphor of who gave you a mouth, or who gives man a mouth, is then not interpreted about Moshe's speech impediment, but rather, the Ishbitzer says, "Shama Kodesh Baruch Hu leMoshe, mi shalach belipcho livroch." Who sent into your heart the idea that you should run away from Egypt? Halazoisi midas Aaron. That's Aaron's way. You know, that is sort of a compromise. You can't deal with stuff, so go away. He neged midasko, that's not your way. Your way is the truth, right? Aaron's like water, you know. He will go with the flow, the way the bed of the stream is shaped and the way the rocks are shaped. Aaron will just flow around them and choose the path of least resistance, because that is the meaning of chesed. But you're Emes. So how come you didn't stand there like a rock in front of Pharaoh and say to Pharaoh what you really think of him? You know, if you're so emes, if you're so into the truth, the naked truth, then why didn't you have your day in court and just stand there and refuse to be moved until Pharaoh will listen to you? You know, well, who told you to run away? That doesn't sound like somebody who's into the truth, right? But you know how it happened? Ani lemadati oischol, God says, I was the one who gave you the idea to run away. Why? Because I needed you to learn something of Aaron's character of patience. V'hinei Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha-shalom achre sheborach miparoi. Now Moshe, after he ran away from Pharaoh, lomad das li savran. There, that's when Moshe learned savlanut. That's when he learned patience and forbearance. And this is why God appears to Moshe in the burning thorn bush. Why wasn't it in a burning apple tree, right? What is the metaphor of the thorn bush? Because God says to Moshe, learn from me. You know, God says, you know where I dwell? I dwell in a thorn bush. I have thorns sticking into me from every side. Hainu savlon godo. God says, you can learn forbearance and patience and suffering in quiet. You could learn that from me. Ki imoy anoichi betzora. God says, because I am with them in their pain. V'hu savlon neged parayin. If I can stand it, that Pharaoh, the untermensch, thinks he's better than me, then you can too. And this is why before Moshe dies, he blesses the tribe of Joseph. He says, I bless you with the will or the willingness of he who dwells in the thorn bush. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to imbue the tribe of Joseph, who are great tzaddikim, they're very saintly, but they need to have patience, so that they be full of goodwill towards the rest of the Jewish people, because we know that Joseph's history is that he can't stand to look and see somebody do something wrong. He gets all het up because it's nisht emes, right? He's not doing the right thing. And so Joseph has these complaints against his brothers that he brings to their father. And so in Jewish history, we find also that the tribe of Joseph has complaints against the Jewish soul. Because it's from this tribe that many of the judgments against the Jewish people arises. When the Jewish people stray a little from the will of God. As we find Shahanovi Hizis Israel, the prophet Amos, he warns the Jewish people and he says, Pentitzlach Keish Bes Yosef, lest the house of Joseph break out like a fire and consume the house of Jacob. Behainu Shemidosoi Loitichois, so Moshe Rabbeinu blesses Yosef. He says, I bless you that you won't get angry, and you be at peace with the rest of the Jewish people. Al kein omer, so therefore he blesses him with what's the blessing? Ritzoin sheich nisne, I bless you with the desire that he who dwells in the thorn bush has for the welfare of the Jewish people. Shashem is borach yilmed oischo, I blessed him, God should teach you the way he taught me at the thorn bush. So now, Moshe has spent 40 years learning savlanut. He spent 40 years learning forbearance and patience, and learning also that truth is the greatest ideal in the world, but it has to remain an ideal. If you are going to try and bring the world to the truth, you're going to bring nothing but trouble. Then it's true. The world would be better off never having been created. So once Moshe reaches some kind of an equilibrium with his need for the truth, then comes peace. And then Ligolis Israel is ready to redeem the Jewish people. So now we understand, if we go back to Psalm 85, Chesed ve'emes nifkishu, Chesed, love, and the truth, they had an encounter. It was like a war. It wasn't just a nice encounter, it was a clash. They're opposing one another. Ki Aaron midas chesed, Aaron is love. For I'm a yivra, he says God created the world. Moshe midas emes, Moshe is the truth, I'm al yivra. So there you've got the clash between Aaron and Moshe. So when Moshe has to run away from Pharaoh, so that's what it means, and you threw the truth to the ground. And then emes, the truth and love, reach some kind of a working arrangement. And so emes changes. The definition of the truth changes, and the definition of the truth becomes justice, which is Aaron. Va'omegam ken yivra. And so now that Moshe agrees with Aaron that it's justice which is important and not the truth, so Moshe agrees to the creation of the world. Va'oz kishenishtavu, and then when they reach this agreement, tzedek v'sholem noshoku, then tzedek, which is justice and peace, nashoku, they kiss. Hainuki az gam shalom omayivar, because then if there's no insistence on looking for the truth, then peace doesn't mind if the world is created. Kimash shalom ametchila aliyivar, because that which peace said in the beginning, don't create the world, hoyeroitzilias b'machloikas neged mid emes, does he want to be at war with the emes? Peace doesn't want to be at war with anything, right? Because it wants to peace. But now that the truth is mitigated and has become a search for justice, so then the peace doesn't want to argue and say no, let there be no creation. They say, yeah, I'll agree also. Ba'az tzedek v'shalom nashaku, and then justice and peace, they kiss. What does kiss mean? Is dabkusa rucha berucha. It's the connection of the spirit and the spirit. You know, when two people kiss, then the breath which is inside one is, you know, flows into the breast of the other. That's the meaning of the kiss, that they share the breath, the ruach, the spirit, right? So what does it mean that tzedek and shalom, that justice and peace kiss, that they share something, that justice has the element of peace in it, and peace has the element of justice in it. So then Moshe goes to Pharaoh, and what does Pharaoh do? He says, you know what, these Jews are lazy. They've got too much time to philosophize. Let's take away their straw. Let's see them make bricks and find their own straw. So then they still have to make the same number of bricks, but now they don't have half the raw materials, and things get really worse for them. So Moshe comes to God and he says, Lama hare oiso, why have you done bad? In Elifir Us, so the Ishbitz says, on the face of things, hupele. I mean, all you can say is this is incomprehensible. Ich yotzmi pi Moshe dovaze. How could out of Moshe's mouth have come these words against God? How could you be so bad to the Jewish people? How could Moshe conceivably have said this? It comes like this. Moshe Rabbeinu loves the Jewish people. When Moshe hears that they're not finished in Egypt, and that they have to be in Egypt through the 12 plagues, the 10 plagues that are going to unfold, and that they're still going to like have to be in Egypt another 12 months. So then he says, God, you can take them out of Egypt now. You can do it right now in one moment. You don't need to process. You don't need to build up your strength. I mean, like, what is holding you back? The Lama Yibbe Mitzrayim Yud Beis Chodesh, what do they need to be in Egypt? If you've promised to bring them out of Egypt, so do it already. Like, who's holding you back? Sheyifachtu Mipneim, and why do they have to go through these plagues, which they were very afraid of? K'mosh Kutzva Sheyigoretz Mipneim, it's not like we were having fun while the plagues were going on. They were very scary. Ki be'emes yoruk am Yisroel me'amakos, we were already afraid of the plagues. So he asks God, like, what is your rationale? Like, why tell them you're going to do this, I'm going to redeem you, and then another year they have to stay in this chaos and turmoil that's going to be happening? And God shows him, it's not because I don't want to bring the Jewish people out now, but because there's something that has to happen to them through the process. It's not me, God says, who has to process. It's you who have to process. Because at that point in our psyche, in our soul, we were really connected to the Egyptians. God came to take a nation out from inside a nation. And we were like an abortion. You know, God had to go into the womb of Egypt and take us out of there. She actually shaykhs im imay, but the fetus, you know, is connected to the mother. They're almost one entity. And that's why the Jewish people had to go through the plagues like the Egyptians did. We had to be there. And even though we suffered vicariously because it didn't actually happen to us, nevertheless, we went through the plagues. And this is what purified their hearts. The Gemara says, the only reason that thunder was created is in order to straighten out the crookednesses of the human heart. And this is the meaning of the verse in the Psalm 91. You'll only see it with your eyes. And you will see the recompense of the wicked. Why do you have to see it with your eyes? Sha'atul mutsrich lir is because you have to see it. Because if you were really, really pure, God says, you wouldn't need to see this. But you need to see this because really, 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 I'll tell you a secret, it should be happening to you. But you know what? I'm going to do you a favor. You're going to watch it happen to somebody else to whom you're really close. And who were those people? Those were the Egyptians. We were really close with them. Shalidei ha-pachad, and through the fear that you have watching, Yisbara ha-kemimus lib'chol le'toiv, you will be straightened out. And so it was that really we needed to go through the 10 plagues and that whole drama, and that was the reason that God wasn't taking us out of Egypt, and it wasn't because God was holding back.